Welcome to the Think Like a CFO podcast, where we dig into not only what it takes to start a business, but to keep your business thriving for years to come using my signature CFO money method framework. I'm your host, Melissa Houston, and I am a CPA and business financial coach. I have over 20 years of experience in business, and it is my passion to share my knowledge of business finance and personal finance with other women. You can also follow me with my column at Forbes.com or my column with Entrepreneur.com. The Millennial Money Woman, also known as Fiona, is an entrepreneur, polyglot, world traveler, and dog lover. Fiona wants young professionals to have what she didn't have growing up, a guiding hand to help make the right financial decisions now so that their future will be a seamless ride. Fiona always knew that she wanted to jump ahead of the game when it comes to finances, so she gathered her resources, stuck her nose into the books, and learned as much as she could. Now Fiona is a certified financial planner, the equivalent to a financial ninja, holds a master's degree in personal financial planning, and has co-founded a local nonprofit that teaches other young professionals financial literacy. Because Fiona gained knowledge and practiced healthy financial habits, Fiona bought her first house at the age of 23, has no debt with the exception of her mortgage, and is on her way to millionaire status in just a few more years. Hey, Fiona, I am so happy to welcome you to the show today. How are you doing?
Hey, Melissa, I'm doing really good. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on the show.
Oh my God, you're so welcome. I'm so excited to have you. You're so high energy and I love what you're putting out there.
Oh my goodness, thank you. You know, it's something that I love to do and I'm so happy to actually share, you know, my story and kind of the tips and tricks, with you and your audience. I'm really looking forward to it.
Perfect. So why don't you start off telling us a bit about yourself and your business?
Definitely. Yeah. So, you know, I've always had a passion for finance and that really started when I was probably a teenager or a preteen. Now that passion was more so about making money and I had no idea what all terms finance was. Like I didn't know what a stock or bond was, but I still really loved the topic about finance. It kind of mesmerized me, right? So anyway, after I kind of got a little bit more comfortable with money or the concept of money, I kind of got involved in financial planning in a practice. And that was just amazing. It was such a new experience because quite frankly, the world of finance is like a second language. I mean, I didn't understand anything. So in order for me to really get more comfortable with kind of the idea and the perspective of what it takes to be good at finance or financial literacy, I got my master's of science in personal financial planning and my certified financial planner certificate, which is kind of the equivalent to being like a finance expert or finance ninja. But yeah, I love it. It's a passion of mine for sure.
That's amazing. I'm curious, as you're speaking about this, did you have a lot of women in your program or was it male dominated?
Oh my goodness. Actually, that's a great point. I was the only woman in my entire program. And actually, I think I'm pretty sure I was the youngest person to get a CFP or one of the youngest in my state too. I mean, it was all male dominated.
Wow. Yeah. That's, you know, it's kind of telling, but it's so sad to hear at the same time. Like I love to, you know, talk about money and especially with women, like I really target women because I feel that we don't talk about this enough and it's not as scary as so many women may think it is. And I really like to get that conversation going around money and whether you're in talking about personal finances or your business finances, it's such an important topic.
That's right. You know, it really is because finance, I mean, you know, let's be real here. The money is really the one thing or one of the few things that makes the world go round. And if you really don't know that much about money other than, you know, you make it and then you spend it, you know, there's a problem because there's so much more possibility and opportunity out there for you and your life to, you know, make a better life, basically, to achieve those financial goals.
Exactly. And wouldn't you say that, okay, like money management is not the most sexy topic, but making money, people love to bring in the money. But the reality of it is, if you're not managing your money properly, you can be bringing in all the money you want in the world, but you can still be broke.
That's exactly right. And I think a lot of people actually have that, have a misconception about that, because a lot of people that I meet also through my practice and the mentorship program that I have, so many people believe that if you earn a lot of money, like let's say you bring in $300,000 a year, that automatically means that you're wealthy. But the reality is, like you said, Melissa, that's not true, because you know, most people like doctors, lawyers, they earn that much money. At least the ones I've met, they've spent, you know, 10 years of their lives earning nothing, basically, right? And having so much student debt. And then once they get into this large windfall, if you will, this huge amount of money that they earn per year, chances are, you know, they'll probably want to spend it on a lot of things and they don't retain it. So, you know, you earn wealth by retaining the money, not by just earning it.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't blame them whatsoever, because of course, part of the goal is once you get out of school and you start making money, that's the reward. You get to spend it. But unfortunately, we don't learn that in school, that the money management is the key to wealth. So people start earning these high level incomes and they're spending like crazy, but they're not realizing that their income is not keeping up with their spending habits.
You nailed it. I mean, that's exactly why I think so many people really aren't that financial literate, because we don't learn those topics, just the basic concepts in school. And that, you know, starts really with middle or high school. And in college, not to mention, you know, I mean, the basic classes in college, those core classes, they typically don't teach you anything about what a loan is. And that's why I think there's so many students out there, especially obviously in America and Canada, they have a lot of student loan debt, because I think that, you know, one of the things that leads to that is because they don't realize what a loan is and what an interest rate is, and that will probably follow them for, you know, one or two decades of their lives, if not more.
Yes. And I'm really noticing with my American clients how a lot of them are still carrying student loan debt well into their 50s. And that really surprises me. But there is a big difference between Canada and the U.S. as far as tuition costs go.
Definitely, yeah. The U.S., unfortunately, has such a high cost of tuition. I mean, I think the student loan debt now in America is, you know, well over $1 trillion. It's just ridiculous. It's really too bad, because you could have a major in possibly philosophy or photography that costs north of $100,000, right? And maybe the option there maybe shouldn't be going to college, rather doing an internship, learning from a mentor, and then going on. But yeah, absolutely. It's too bad that America is so much more expensive than Canada in that regard.
Yes, for sure. So Fiona, I mean, I really admire the fact that you're putting yourself out in the world as an entrepreneur. Can you tell us more about the business that you are creating for yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Millennial Money Woman, which is the website that I founded, really focuses on helping young professionals, specifically women, to take control of their financial lives. And not only is the goal of the website to make money less scary, right? Anything related to money, it kind of just sounds A, boring, and B, it sounds a little scary, if you will. I want to make that fun. I want to make it relatable. And I want to be able to help break down seemingly complex topics into something that is understandable for everyone. Because let's face it, finance is really difficult to understand if you read the, you know, the jargon, the industry jargon.
And that's what I loved about your website and just you as an entrepreneur in general. You bring so much energy to the topic. It is a less sexy topic, as we mentioned earlier. And you just bring in that energy and that know-how. And I'm reading your blogs and I love how you break it down into just simple facts, because finance doesn't have to be overwhelming. And I just love your approach to it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, I think I grew up with the same idea that, you know, finance and investing, it has to be something really sexy, like the sexy topic of every minute you're on your phone or you're on your computer and you're looking at the stock markets and the ticker symbol and, you know, you're calling up people to sell or buy this or sell that. And the real, you know, let's get down to the real thing here. It's not that way. If you want to become wealthy investing or just in finance in general, it's not sexy. It's pretty boring. And you just have to stick to some basic concepts, which I'm happy to share later on with your audience. And as long as you're consistent, the chances are you'll actually become successful and make a lot of money.
And that's where the sexiness comes in, making the money.
That's right. That's right.
And we're here to lead the way in trying to teach people, you know, it may sound boring, but it really isn't that boring. Because once you start realizing in your own situation how your money habits and how you manage your money affects your wealth levels, then it becomes more exciting because this is about you and this is what you're striving to achieve.
That's right. And I think that's an important topic for everyone to understand. Because personal finance is personal, like it says, right? So obviously, there's so many tips and pieces of advice out there. I think a lot of us need to understand that it is good advice in general. However, we need to consider our own personal situation and then kind of tweak those pieces of advice to match our specific scenario. So absolutely right.
So then I would love you to walk through with me, like, let's just pretend that I don't know anything about finances. I've come to you as a client and I've said, okay, I have $1,000 that I need to do something with and I don't know what to do with it. So how would you advise me on that?
Sure. All right. And this is actually a great scenario because I think $1,000 is pretty relatable because let's say we got a, you know, holiday bonus or I don't know, we have $1,000 sitting around. So there are three things that I would look at first before doing anything in terms of investing. The first thing is I would look to see if I had bad debt sitting around. And by bad debt, I mean basically credit card debt or any other really high interest earning debt, right? So let's say you have $500 or $800 on your credit card as a balance. That's not typically good because you will have to pay 24% or more in interest on that debt. So if you pay off first any of that bad credit card debt, for example, you'll actually be earning like a 24% return on your investment. That's kind of how I see it. So first things first, if you have credit card debt, for example, pay that off ASAP.
I love that because most people don't understand how their credit card interest accumulates and how much it ends up costing them.
Oh, that's so true. I mean, I think there's so many fallacies out there where people believe that, you know, having a certain amount of debt on your credit card is good because it increases your credit score, etc. That's not the case. You want to have zero credit card debt. And if you don't have zero, or maybe you can't afford that, then the goal would be to try to pay every last cent toward that credit card debt until it's actually gone. Because the interest rate is really what will kill you. Because it's 24% or more. It's really high. So the second thing, so like I said, the first thing is making sure you eliminate your bad debt. The second part is making sure you have an adequate emergency savings fund. And let me go into that and kind of explain what that is. So an emergency savings fund, kind of like the name already explains, is kind of like a bucket or like an account that you can grab or kind of can dip into in case you have an emergency. Examples of emergencies might be a flat tire. They could be something like, you know, you had a medical bill or a vet bill or something like that, something unexpected, right? Something that you weren't thinking that you had to pay this month. So instead of having to rack up your credit card debt, instead of having that interest rate accumulating on your credit cards, you'd actually dip into your emergency savings fund. So in other words, you'd have 3 to 6 months worth of your monthly living expenses in cash. And the reason why 3 to 6 months is kind of the rule of thumb here, and again, it's a rule of thumb, is because, you know, what if maybe you lose your job or something happens where it's going to be costly? We want to avoid, by all means, to accessing your credit card. So instead, we have this liquid emergency savings fund. And by liquid, I mean readily accessible.
And that is such a fantastic tip, especially in the times that we're in these days.
That's right. Yeah. COVID, you know, and the pandemic. I mean, so many jobs have been unfortunately lost to that. And, you know, while you're waiting for getting a new job or applying, et cetera, that's when you really would need this emergency fund. It's like a rainy day fund, if you want to call it that.
Yes, such a good tip.
Yeah, you know, it's helpful too for us, like you said, especially in this day and age. So basically, if you have no credit card debt, and if you have an emergency savings fund that's kind of resembling your 3 to 6 month worth of monthly living expenses, now we can move on to the third step, which is actually investing your $1,000. So there are really two ways to invest $1,000. And there's one that I recommend and one that I don't recommend. The first way is investing a lump sum contribution. And what that means is basically taking your $1,000 check and you put it into the stock market all at once, $1,000, boom, done, and you invest it. That's a lump sum. The second way, and this is the way that I would recommend for most people to do it, is to create a systematic investment plan. And that's basically a fancy talk for creating, instead of dumping $1,000 into the stock market, you'll split it up over a certain period of time for a certain number of payments. So let's say, you know, you want to invest your $1,000 over 10 weeks. So what that means is you take $100 every week and you invest it in the stock market. And the positive, or the reason why I suggest you do it this way, is because you spread your risk, you diversify your risk over a longer time period, right? So let's say the stock market is at all-time highs and it's really expensive to buy a stock, but you dump in your $1,000. Well, guess what? You get less of that stock because it's so expensive. However, if you invest $100 this week and next week the stock market goes down and you invest another $100 when it goes down, you're actually going to get more stock because it's less, it costs less. And the next week again, you invest another $100. So basically, you're doing an average, you're investing the average of what the stock market does over that 10-week period. So this systematic investing strategy is not exactly sexy, but it does get the trick done.
For sure. And I completely agree with what you're saying. What would you advise to people, though? The tendency is, if the stock price dropped dramatically, people tend to get emotional over that and just unload their stocks. So what would you recommend for the long-term savings?
That's a great point. And, you know, the emotional part, like you said, Melissa, it plays such a big role into investing because, you know, let's be frank, this is your money. This is your hard-earned money. And obviously the last thing you want to see is have the stock market or the economy gobble it up. So you'll naturally be a little bit more careful with, you know, how the stock market is performing. But in cases like the one we just described, you know, in case the stock market plummets like it did, at least in America in March of 2018, and I'm sure the rest of the world as well, we want to go against the masses. So your instinct in case the stock markets do basically crash would be, like you said, take the money out of the stock market. But the reality is, if the stock market goes down, really, really significantly down, it's like you're getting stocks on sale. And who doesn't like getting stuff on sale? Like if you go to Walmart or if you go to, you know, your favorite clothing store and you see 80% off of a really nice, you know, shirt or whatever it is, you'd probably want it because it's on sale. And that's the same concept with the stock market. When the stock market goes down, you're getting stocks on sale.
Exactly. And who doesn't love a sale? And we all overspend on a sale. So the best sale to spend your money on is investing it.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You know, it's a lot about training your mindset and training that perspective that when the stocks go down, that's actually the best time to sell. And when they actually go up, when the stock market, you know, you hear in the news, it's at all-time highs. that's actually a point where you want to be a little bit more cautious, because when something goes up, it's also very likely to go down. And once it's down, that's the best time to invest and buy.
Buy low, sell high.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I think probably I also want to make sure I let, you know, your audience know maybe some tips on what to invest in. And this is, I'm not going to give any specific ticker names or anything like that, but I do want to share kind of a concept that probably will help on the long run. And the key here is patience, and it is a long-term mindset, because my suggestions, they're not for those people that want, you know, to become a millionaire tomorrow. It's not going to happen with this mindset or mentality, which is what I'm going to show now. So my tip, if you do have $1,000 and you don't have bad credit card debt, for example, and you have a good emergency savings fund, and you do decide your systematic investment plan, the next step is to consider investing in index funds. And index funds, they basically are an aggregate. So that means this is, although you're investing in one single fund, the fund itself invests in like 500 different companies, right? So although, again, your money's going into one fund, that one fund is made up of 500 plus different companies that your money is going to be invested in. And the reason why it might be a good idea to go into an index fund instead of, let's say, a single company like Apple or Tesla or something like that is, again, the idea of risk and the idea of diversification. So basically, the concept of diversification and really spreading your risk out over a bunch of companies, be it 500 or 3,000 or more, because index funds can do that. The idea is, if one company goes bankrupt, let's say, in your investment index fund of 500 companies, chances are your $1,000 will not see a ding. Maybe they'll see a decrease of a dollar. Right. So instead of having your investment be worth $1,000, it's now worth $999. And why is that? If one company goes bankrupt in your 500 different company investment, that's because you're invested through 500 different companies. Right. So it really doesn't matter if one company underperforms or one company goes bankrupt. You won't see that impact on your investment, or maybe you'll see it very slightly. However, if you take your $1,000 and, you know, you invest it all in Apple or Amazon or whatever it is, yes, technology has been on a run lately. I mean, technology is amazing. But what if something happens? Let's say, you know, I don't know, there's a hack going on and all of a sudden Apple or Amazon or whoever is struggling with their company and the stocks just plummet. Well, this is actually the time to probably invest more, but you'll see your entire investment of $1,000 plummet too. And that's not what we want, right? We want your investment to be pretty stable and increase over time. And that's what index funds do. They're not really sexy, but they get the job done. And I can say that with 99% certainty. I mean, you know, I'll throw in a disclaimer that, you know, obviously past performance doesn't indicate future performance, but you know, let's hope that it does, because over the last 50 years, index funds, plain old index funds, have actually returned 7%. And that's actually pretty good because inflation has been about 2%, right? So
yeah, 7% is very impressive.
It is. It really is. And especially, you know, if you're young, if you're a young professional, working professional, millennial, and, you know, you'll be working for probably another 30 years, 40 years or longer, that $1,000 that you're investing today, imagine it just returning through compound interest and growth and growth and growth if you just let it sit there. 40 years time, that's going to be probably a couple thousand dollars if you don't add anything to it. So it's definitely worth the investing.
I love compound interest, but that's a whole topic for another day.
Definitely. Yeah. It's compound interest is certainly it's an exciting topic. In my opinion, it's the eighth world wonder.
Yeah.
But I agree. There is a lot more that goes into that. So definitely a different topic. So basically the goal here, once you have invested the $1,000 and once you have created that systematic investment plan and decided to go an index fund strategy, okay, let's say you did that. The next thing is pretty easy, actually. You wait, right? There's nothing else to it. You don't keep looking at your phone. You don't keep looking at your computer. You just wait, because that's really what it's all about. In order to be really, truly successful in investing, you got to have that long-term mindset. And that's what I was talking about earlier. It's nothing that will likely happen, you know, tomorrow. You probably won't become a millionaire tomorrow by investing $1,000. However, if you wait and if you stay the route, so you don't take out your money when the stocks fall down, you don't, you know, you keep your money as is, or you continue adding more money as you get more money, then chances are you will see a financially successful picture down the road. But the point is, it just takes time.
Yes, I love that. I call it the set it and forget it mentality.
Definitely, yeah. Automation in that is key. Yeah. Like, I love doing that.
Yeah, you just kind of plan for it. You look at it as though it's an expense, and you're just paying into your future and just leave it there.
Exactly. Out of sight, out of mind. And quite frankly, even for me with my investments, I forget about the fact that I'm investing every week. It's like, I don't see it. I don't do it. It just happens.
Yeah. I love that. That's a fantastic tip.
Yeah. You know, it helps because it's just one less thing that we have to do in our already really busy lives. I mean, who has time to think about investing and transferring $100 to this index fund or whatever it is? No one really, right? We're all busy with our lives. So if you do automate it, and if you do set and forget it, like you said, Melissa, that's probably one of the best things you can do to yourself.
Exactly.
So actually, Melissa, there is one other thing I wanted to share with you and your audience. And that is, you can actually become a millionaire at 65 or earlier if you invest $9.43 per day, roughly.
Woohoo! And it sounds so unachievable. It sounds like unbelievable, but it's so true. So please share this information with everybody.
Definitely. Yeah, it blew my mind when I first heard about that. I mean, I did the math too. And I was like, oh my God, this actually works. This actually works. And why are we not hearing this more?
Yeah, exactly. Share the wisdom.
Yeah. Definitely. So here's really the math to it. If you save $9.43 per day, right? That's, you know, maybe going, I don't know, to Starbucks once less a week. It's not, you know, it's not no more Starbucks. It's just one time less a week or whatever it is. You know, maybe you don't go out to eat this week once, whatever it is. But the point is, if you take $9.43 per day and you invest it in that index fund, right, that I was talking about earlier, and you keep investing every single day. So let's say you start investing at 20 and you invest that $9.43 per day. At 65, you will be a millionaire. It will actually happen because it's a consistent strategy. That's it. And that's the whole key to becoming a millionaire when you're older. It's that you're consistent, right? I mean, once you start that investing strategy, you cannot stop, because if you stop, A, you lose your discipline, and B, you lose that investing momentum.
And that's the beauty of compound interest as well. And, you know, investing at the age of 20 for sure gives you the advantage. But for the listener who may be, you know, a little older and feeling a little deflated right now because they feel that time might not be on their side, I know that there is definitely time still. So do you have a scenario perhaps there, or just maybe some advice for listeners who might be over the age of 20?
Absolutely. You know, anyone can start anytime. So that's the beauty of investing, right? You're never too old or too young to start. So let's say, you know, we have someone who's age 25 and they want to start investing. So in that case, if you're 25, you want to save about $49.60 per day, and you'll be able to retire at age 65 as a millionaire because you have a 24-year time frame, right? So your time frame is reduced. But I can even do one better. If you're, let's say,
you want to become a millionaire by 49, okay? You can invest. This is about $900 a month, but you can still become a millionaire. The point is the time frame, that's the most important thing. So let's say you start investing at 30 or 35. That's absolutely fine, but chances are you'll probably have to increase that investment amount per day, per week, per month, whatever it is, in order to achieve your financial goals.
And the good thing about investing at a little later in life too is chances are you've got that extra money because you're at the situation where your salary is higher, your expenses may be lower. I mean, there's no right or wrong age to invest. For sure, it helps people to start early, but I don't want to dissuade people who are in their 30s or 40s or even 50s. I mean, investing your money is always a good thing if you've got the right strategy. And time certainly helps. But if you're looking for information on investing, you certainly can reach out to someone and get some good advice there.
Exactly right. And as you said, there is no right or wrong answer to how much you should be investing. And, you know, truth of the fact is, when you're 20, you probably don't have $9 extra, you know, or however much that is to invest. Maybe you do. But as you grow older, yes, you definitely have that added income stream. So, you know, one of those tips is as you increase your income, you probably still want to put a good amount toward your investing strategy. So kind of my rule of thumb is you want to put about 30%, 20 to 30% of what you earn into your investments. And that's a lot because I know most rules of thumb say about 15%. But if your goal is to be above average, I think you have to do what the average won't do.
Exactly. And the earlier you start, the better.
Yes.
Well, Fiona, these are some fantastic tips that you've offered listeners. If you had one particular tip that you wanted a listener to walk away with today, what do you think that would be?
I think probably the number one tip here is when you start investing, you want to be consistent. Consistency is key. And this might not be the tip that most people would be expecting, but I think it's the most important thing because let's say you're not even at the point of investing yet. Let's say you're still trying to pay off, you know, a $10,000 credit card bill. Well, the key here is also to be consistent paying off your credit card debt, mm-hmm. right? And once you pay that off, then you can be consistent at boosting your emergency savings fund. And once that's done, you can be consistent at investing. But the point is, you have to start. And once you start, you can't stop, right? That's all about consistency. So yeah, I think consistency is really the most important thing there is to be successful in your financial career.
Absolutely. And I find the momentum towards savings and investing and paying off debt and stuff comes with the consistency.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you just have to start and continue doing what you're doing.
Exactly. There's no perfect day to start. You just have to start.
That's exactly right. I know the first step is often the hardest step, but once you get past that first step, you just keep that momentum, take it with you. And, you know, as long as you reach your goal.
Yeah, it gets easier. It gets easier. And the incentive too is when you start seeing how either your debt is being reduced or your wealth is being increased, it definitely gives you that good feeling.
I agree. Absolutely.
Because, you know, quite often money and feelings go hand in hand.
They do. And sometimes it's good, but they do. Sometimes not so much. Yeah.
Yes. Money is probably the most emotionally charged topic I've ever talked about.
Oh my gosh.
It's probably more so than politics and religion. People just don't talk about money.
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's a taboo. And, you know, in order to get more comfortable though with money, you have to talk about it. That's just the way it is.
Yes, Fiona, I am so glad that you came on the show to share your wisdom with us. And you've certainly shared a lot of valuable tips for the listeners. I can't thank you enough for sharing this.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you having me here on the show. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks for listening to the Think Like a CFO podcast with Melissa Houston, CPA. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe and share this episode with someone you think would love it. Until next time, I'm Melissa Houston, and remember, nobody will ever care about your business as much as you do. So never give your financial power away.